Welcome to tonight's edition of the Molloy Program. We're going to do something entirely different for this program tonight. We're actually going to start taking phone calls almost immediately. How about that? At least for the first 2 hours. The third hour, I have dark and scary topics to get into. How long has it been since you read The Divine Comedy or any part of it? The Inferno is the one I'm... Oh, well, we'll get to that third hour. If it's been a while since you read Dante's Inferno, here's your homework assignment. If you have a copy handy, nobody has The Inferno or the Divine Comedy handy, unless you're still in high school, I guess. But go to Canto 33... Lines 118 to 147. Canto 33, lines 118 to 147. And that's in the Inferno section of the Divine Comedy. But for the first couple of hours, we're going to take some phone calls tonight. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. The reason we're going to take some calls is we are 1 week out now from the election from hell. An election to a certain degree that is more so than previous elections is going to determine, just like the election in 1994 did, going to determine the course of this country for quite some time. Had the Republicans not gotten power in 1994, I don't think, legislative power, I don't think Glass-Steagall ever would have been rescinded. And if Glass-Steagall Act had not been rescinded, we would never have had the three meltdowns and the depression that we're now in. Thanks. All delivered to you courtesy of the Republicans and, of course, Bill Clinton signing the damn thing. But the Republicans and Democrats who went along being agents of the monster capitalism, being nothing but 25-cent whores, no offense to real sex workers, for capitalism. So the election 1994, what I'm trying to get at, was significant. It was the election from hell. This is the new election from hell. So what we're looking for tonight is your comments. And again, if you're conservative, you've got lots of programs to call. Please don't bother us. I just don't want to hear what you got to say. You know, y'all are crazier than outhouse rats, and I just not interested. But if you're a normal person, or striving to be a normal person, and you want to comment, join us. All right, 877-996-2556. A couple of things here. Steve in Grapevine, Texas, wrote a very quick email. Subject line is, "It's time to get a gun." He writes, "Mike, before the onslaught of the baggers, I never thought I would need a gun. God damn them." Steve, Grapevine, Texas. Yeah, I hear you, Steve. I completely hear you. Crazy. The Rand Paul nutcase. Did you see that video? Everybody's seen the video. Did you see it? Stomping on this woman's head. Oh, Mike, that wasn't a stomp. All he did was put his foot on her head and push. That wasn't a stomp. When I saw that, all I could think of was the line from... Orwell's 1984, when O'Brien says to Winston Smith, "Do you want an image or a picture of the future? Picture a boot on the face of somebody lying on the ground." I'm paraphrasing. That is the future. Who said that? Was that O'Brien? I think it was O'Brien. When he was doing the Cheney number on Winston Smith. Oh, well. But there it was. And Prairie 2 says, as we say in Frankfort, Kentucky, Ein Volk, Ein Kentucky, Ein Rand. I'm not laughing at the woman from, where was she from? MoveOn.org, I think so. I'm not laughing about the fact that this rancid son of a bitch who feels that because he's in the presence, and if you watch a video, Rand Paul gets out of a car and walks past the scene that's starting to unfold, and then this thug, this miserable, beer-bellied, white son of a bitch comes out of the shadows. And when this woman is knocked to the ground, this great big male, this big strong man, you cowardly punk, steps on her face! Excuse me. 6 minutes into the program and I'm yelling. I'm sorry. Ein Volk, Ein Kentucky, Ein Rand. My email here, Pretty Spider, Irish Dave, really writes, I'm guessing his brown shirt was in the Chinese laundry. He probably got his boot from the People's Republic of China, too. Ein Volk, Ein Kentucky, Ein Rand! You get it? Ein Rand? You get it? Ein Volk, Ein Kentucky, Ein Rand? Please get it. I thought that was one of the best things that Irish Dave has ever sent in. Ein Volk, Ein Kentucky, Ein Rand.
Yeah, son of a bitch. Woo!
A woman protesting Rand Paul in Kentucky was stomped on by some good old boy while she was held down by others. This is from Tim in Los Angeles. These tea partiers, tea baggers, are the vanguard of a Nazi-like movement in the U.S., no question about it. It reminded me of film you see from the early days of Nazi Germany in the 30s. The brown shirts storming through the streets, beating people up, humiliating Jews, intimidating everyone in their path, etc. Paul, the candidate, deplored the action, saying that violence has no place in our democracy. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, giggle, giggle. But he knows damn well that the dogs are loose, and thanks to the disinformation of the Tea Party vanguard, or I'm sorry, the disinformation that the Tea Party and their even more extreme allies are spreading, it's only the start of a new era in American politics. You can be sure that we're going to see more incidents of this type down the road. This kind of thing is an indicator of the hatred and fear out there among the people in this country. And in my opinion, if it continues like this, it can only lead to a large-scale domestic terrorist event such as the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. It's a real bad scene that's developing here in the United States. You know what? Tim asks, the legislative, executive, and law enforcement types all freak out when some nonviolent protesters take direct action or do property crimes to bring attention to certain issues. I'm not condoning those here. All the while, when the real internal terrorist threat is clearly from the far right, those individuals and groups are all about political violence toward people. I don't see a good ending here, do you? At least in the short to medium term anyway. No one can predict the long-term outcome, but I hope that those of us who survive this mess will try to build a better, less corrupt system than the one we currently have. It's the political system that we now have that's broken, probably beyond repair. Tim in Los Angeles. Yeah, it's just getting... Have you noticed you don't see people getting their heads stomped or people with a Democratic candidate sticker on their car, as we talked about last night, being dragged out of a restaurant and arrested. You don't see Democrats threatening to kill somebody, as we saw Palomino do. You don't see Democratic candidates unleashing their hired thugs, which happen to be active duty U.S. servicemen, to arrest someone who is a journalist. You see all of this from these Republicans, all of this from the right wing, all of this from the teabaggers. So they are, in a sense, casting the first stone. And I'll be a son of a bitch when you know, I wish I were more of a pacifist. I wish I were someone who could breathe in and breathe out, but I'm not. I'm somebody, if you throw a stone at me, I'll pick up a goddamn machine gun and won't stop shooting until all the bullets are gone. Hey, I'm Mike Malloy, and I'm packing up the family and leaving the country. And we want you to come along. Okay, it's only a week, but you're invited to join me, Kathy and Molly, on a 7-night Progressive Voices cruise to the Eastern Caribbean. Also on board are Kerry Harrison, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Ring of Fire co-hosts Mike Papantonio and David Bender. You'll sail with Mike Farrell of MASH and his wife, Shelley Favre, from The Stephanie Miller Show, actor-comedian Hal Sparks, Daily Show co-creator Liz Winstead, and other Progressive hosts as well. We sail from Fort Lauderdale on February 5th to Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, and the pristine Half Moon Key. Join us and escape from those crazy teabaggers for a week with your fellow truth seekers. If you missed our incredible cruise a couple of years ago to Mexico, don't miss this one. Go to MikeMalloy.com and click on the Progressive Voices link to reserve your cabin. And please make sure you select Mike Malloy on the drop box that asks how you heard about the trip. Can't wait to see you on board.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour. In addition to the violence of these teabag creatures who really are to governance in this country as termites are to a beautiful wooden Victorian mansion. In addition to their propensity toward violence, because they are, after all, the spawn of the brown shirts. There is no debating that any longer. That's who they are, exactly who they are. But in addition to their tendency toward violence, also prominent in their makeup is their insistence on jamming fundamentalist Christianity down everybody's throats relentlessly, without let up. Christine O'Donnell says God told her to run, in the same way that George Bush said God told him to go murder hundreds of thousands of people. These are sick, sick individuals. I'm sure you get another. There's another one. Colorado Republican Senate candidate and teabagger Ken Buck said he strongly disagrees with one of the bedrock principles of American society, the separation of church and state. Just like Christine, whatever, O'Donnell said, where is separation of church and state? The First Amendment. You think that's separation of church and state? Ken Buck, he said at a forum for Republican Senate candidates, quote, I disagree strongly with the concept of separation of church and state. It was not written into the Constitution. Still quoting, while we have a Constitution that's very strong in the sense that we are not going to have a religion that's sanctioned by the government, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it doesn't mean that we need to have a separation between government and religion. And so that concerns me a great deal, end quote. In his statement, he also criticized Obama for calling the White House Christmas tree last year a holiday tree. He said, it's just flat wrong. In my mind, Jesus, God. Whatever happened to... Jefferson wrote in 1801 that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, and argued the Constitution required building a wall of separation between church and state. Sharon Angle. Angle denied that the separation of church and state arises out of the Constitution. This is what Sharon Angle said, quote, Thomas Jefferson has been misquoted, like I've been misquoted, out of context. Oh, my God, she equates herself with Jefferson. Woo! She said, quote, Thomas Jefferson was actually addressing a church and telling them through his address that there had been a wall of separation put up between the church and the state precisely to protect the church from being taken over by a state religion. That's what they meant by that. They didn't mean we couldn't bring our values to the political forum. What? End quote. Well, to the Jews out there, even if you are a non-observant Jew, guess what? Do you speak Spanish? Can you read Torquemada in the original language? When Torquemada in the Spanish Inquisition took the Jews and gave them a choice. Jesus. Or we'll cut your throat. And if you're a Muslim, oh, man, give it up quick. Lose the characteristic style of dressing and change your name. What's your name? Ben Ami? Oh, no, that's Jewish. What's your name? Aziz? Change it to Jones. A lot of black people had to do that.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Gene is in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Gene.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I really want to thank you for doing your best to weave the thread through all the things that are happening. And I don't know if you've talked about this before, but I just want to bring up another piece to the things that you've been talking about tonight. That is that back, I don't remember if it was the 70s or the 80s, but somewhere around in that time period, the fundamentalist Christians started their campaign of running stealth candidates for school boards.
Yeah.
And there has been a gradual movement upwards through the system to fill all the slots in government to the point where there's the ability to take over through the political system, and as you said, force fundamental Christianity on the rest of us.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that is most infuriating to me. They can't justify their moronic, imbecilic attitude by claiming they're instructed to do so by the capitalists. But they can justify their moronic, stupid attitudes by saying that they're instructed to do so by God.
And the interesting thing is, you've been talking about all of the violent behaviors on the far right in this campaign season and the correlation to the stormtroopers of the Nazis. And it's interesting that the Nazis vilified many different people, particularly gay people, which is where the pink triangle came from, like the gold star that Jews were forced to wear. Gays were forced to wear pink triangles. And we see the same thing happening all over again. The Nazis used some version of Christianity, starting from Hitler on down. It's so eerily similar. I don't understand why people can't see it.
Well, I think part of the reason, Gene, is because people choose not to see. Don't forget, ignorance in this country, political ignorance, is willful. It isn't because there is not a ton of information out there for people to draw on. It's just willful ignorance, and it has been ever since. Look, this country died. It died on December 8th, 2000. December 8th, 2000. That's the day that the United States Supreme Court, by ruling of 5-4, the five neo-fascists on the court, ordering that the presidency be given to George W. Bush and that the vote counting stop in Florida. And as investigation after investigation proved, had the vote counting continued, Al Gore would have been president. So we have had a full decade here of active destruction of this country. Prior to December 8th, 2000, in my humble opinion, the destruction was more passive. It was still going on, but it was going on behind the scenes. It was going on through the infiltration of all of our systems in this country, whether they were religious systems or economic systems or political systems, by this hard right-wing neo-Nazi attitude. But after December 8th, 2000, there was no longer any need whatsoever to pretend that the end of America was not at hand. And it's been a decade now, and this, of course, is a fulfillment of what the Reagan Revolution, so-called, was all about. It was revenge for what happened to Barry Goldwater in 1964. It only took him, 16 years to get Reagan in office, and then it's taken another 30 to bring about the utter and absolute end of government as you and I and people in our age group and down probably to about age 45 or 50 are familiar with. One of the reasons there is not resistance, I think, is because so many people who are in their 20s and 30s right now have never known a union movement, have never known a protest movement other than protesting George W. Bush's wars of opportunity. And just don't have that kind of genetic predisposition to take to the streets. So I hear what you're saying, and it just I don't know. It's heartbreaking. Gene, thanks. I need to leave it there. I appreciate what you had to say. I need to leave there before you start crying again. I said if you are Muslim, change your name from Aziz to say Jones. Okay, the reason I had Aziz in my mind is because Tariq Aziz, who was Saddam's spokesman in the run-up to the destruction of his country, was handed a death sentence by an Iraqi court. Was it yesterday? So I had that name in my mind, Aziz. So Reg writes, Aziz is a Christian family. Tariq Aziz is Christian. And will meet his maker in Jesus land when they hang him. And hang him they will. Now that the death sentence has been handed to poor old Tariq Aziz. Anyway, thanks, Reg. When the death sentence is carried out. And it's taken them a while, hasn't it? I mean, when did we, in 2003, it's taken them 7 years to hang poor old Tariq Aziz. You remember him. He obviously has a thyroid problem. His eyes kind of bug out, and he wears those thick glasses. And what I heard on NPR today, or on The World, I think, from PRI, Tariq Aziz's son saying that, what is probably the obvious, that the man was never involved, so the son claims, in the atrocities committed by Saddam Hussein, if you want to believe that, and the atrocities committed by Saddam Hussein were orchestrated by the maniacal governments in this country since Ronald Reagan. So Tariq Aziz is guilty of being in the wrong place historically at the wrong time. I wonder if I'll let him see a priest. I wonder what branch of Christianity. Maronite Christians? No, that's Mark Maron's church. Eastern Orthodox? I don't know. What would Tariq Aziz be? All right, Reg, you could research that for me and let me know. You didn't know the Maronite church was Mark Maron's organization? You didn't? Oh, I'll be damned. Oh, my God, AJ, the Music Factory decided to grace us with his presence after about 2 years. Hello, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you?
I'm getting by. What's going on? Are you ready to vote?
Better dead than red, my friend.
Hey, you live in upstate New York, right?
Yeah.
You going to vote for Cuomo or Belladino?
Let me tell you, the big issue up here is hydrofracking.
Yeah, right.
I heard you talking to what's the guy from Head On Radio yesterday?
Bob Kincaid.
Bob Kincaid about mountaintop removal, and up
right.
here,
it's fracking.
Hydrofracking.
Right.
Yeah.
Pushing.
And obviously, I was talking to Liza just a couple of days ago about it, and. It's not that Cuomo has an outstanding record on this. We don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
He's been kind of cagey about the subject. But what we do know is that Palladino would drill on Inauguration Day. And so this is what we're caught between. And
mm-hmm.
once again, it's between bad and worse. And we're tired of it and we're exhausted and I thought I would. I was telling Kathy. I got very very busy. And then also there were some things about the show that I wanted to talk to you about. I have to email you.
Okay.
About that stuff. But hopefully when I do, you'll still want to talk to me. but I'm devoted to the show. I always have been and always will be. But. I thought I would give you a call before the apocalypse next week.
Yeah, oh
and,
yeah, yeah. Well, it's surely coming if you believe the pundits. A week from tonight, the teabaggers and the Republicans will have reasserted God's natural order on the United States, and that is fascism.
Yep, and this douche down in Kentucky that stepped on a woman's head. I think that's just a prelude. And, I wrote on my Facebook page that, the silence that you're about to hear is from the Red Menace, and it's going to be deafening. They're not going to say a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Red leadership should be screaming from one end of the country to the other about this.
Right.
And they're not going to say a word. And I think that is sort of a portent of things to come if these people get in and if they're empowered.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, AJ. Go ahead.
I've been concerned all along. I mean, the teabaggers were humorous in sort of a vile way, but I never took it lightly the way a lot of progressives did, because I was one of the guys who looked at George Bush when he came forward and said, "That's it. It's over. No one will ever vote for this guy."
Yeah.
And now...
Hey, listen, hold on. AJ, hold on. Let me put you on hold for a second. I got to do a break here. We'll be right back.
the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, we're talking here to AJ, the Music Factory, who has called in from upstate New York. All right, you were just finishing up, I think, right?
Yeah, I was. What I was saying was that I was one of the people who never thought that the oil slick could be elected into office or voted into office. And after that, I'll believe anything.
Yeah.
And so as these boorish, ignorant, psychotic teabaggers started to surface like a fungus, and people dismissed them because their ignorance and their boorishness came off rather, you know, funny. I didn't think it was that funny after a short while, because we'd already been through it with the other guy, and I thought this is, and so I'm not terribly shocked that they're poised to take several seats. I'm not terribly shocked to find that the Democrats have formed their perfect circular firing squad yet again.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by your interview last night with the senator from Alaska. But I think most interestingly is that, kind of going along a theme here with your show, over the years, there's one thing that I've never really bought, a premise that you've had, which is, you know, just let them have it and let them run it into the ground. And in the last year, I've actually come around to your way of thinking on this. And it's not because I've been zombified by a talk show host that I happen to be enamored with. I've looked at it and I thought to myself, it's the slow bleed that's killing us.
That's right.
And maybe if we hit bottom, you know, maybe we've got a chance to start moving up again. But this two step forward, one step back, this is killing it's just killing everything. It's killing our resources and it's killing our spirit. And I know I've had it with this country. I mean, I don't really consider this place mine. You know?
Yeah, so, it's, excuse me, what's that line from Leonard Cohen? I love the country, but I can't stand the scene.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it in reference to the U.S. since he's Canadian, but the political system and has been so corrupted, so destroyed by partly the lack of concern by normal, regular people. When people started saying to themselves, well, I'm not going to go vote today because it's raining out. Well, I'm not going to work for this campaign because I just don't have time. Well, when people started detaching from the political system, it was just a matter of time before the Nazis move in. That's just the way it goes. The communists don't move in when people say, I'm not interested anymore. That's when the Nazis move in. The communists move in when the country is already in turmoil and the communists take advantage of it. I'm talking about the Stalinist kind of communists. The communists take advantage of it, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a totalitarian state. But the Nazis, all they have to do is just wait until people say, I'm sick of the system, I'm tired of it, I don't know what to do, I've had enough, and there's no violent revolution going on. That's when you get a guy or a woman or several or a thousand who say, you know what the problem is? The problem are those socialists. The problem are those Jews. The problem is those Muslims. The problem are those union workers. The problem can be solved just by voting for me. And off we go. So
yeah, and we're going down this Saturday to the rally. In fact, we're playing music on the bus. We actually got a gig doing that, playing on the bus on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being organized by a guy who I had a conversation with, and he really likes this idea that Stuart is putting out about restoring, you know, the sanity and kind of dialing it down.
Right.
But one thing that we need to understand is that the rhetoric got dialed up, not by the left, but by the right.
Yeah.
And what happened was that as soon as Obama got in, the right started co-opting everything that the left was saying about Bush for 8 years as if it was true.
I know.
Some of us may have enjoyed throwing mud balls at Bush, but he earned every single one of those.
Right, right.
So it was all, suddenly it was a game of, you know, well, so are you, so is your mother.
Yeah.
Just because they say it, it doesn't make it true. Whereas when the left was saying the things they were saying about, you know, when the left was saying that Cheney was a war criminal, that wasn't just an invective.
Right.
It was fact.
Fact. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And that Bush was, these were all facts. And then all of a sudden Obama came in and they said everything that the left was saying. They said everything about the Obama administration. So I'm a little bit concerned that, yeah, okay, we need to dial it down, but let's hold on to the facts while we do that. And of course, this guy today was good enough to show us the facts when he stepped on that woman's head. This is the red menace of the 21st century. This is it. That was the face of it this afternoon. We saw it right there.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
So, listen, I'm going to send you an email. And we'll see if you take my calls after I send you the email.
Well, I'm sure I will, unless you become a Republican. If you become a Republican, AJ, that might change everything. But all right, listen.
Is there a difference?
Not much. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks for your good work.
All right, take care, AJ. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is a Malloy program. We'll come back to your phone calls here in just a second. Just a second. Email here from Alberta, Canada, Saskatchewan. Mike, I thought this incident in Kentucky was precipitated by cultural ignorance and political naivete. A sick and rabid animal will attack when it is frightened. I don't condone the violence, but I certainly understand why it happened. The woman should have been better informed about what it is like when you wander into the swamp. It is starting to feel unsafe to voice opinions here, too. No bumper stickers, except for the faded Obama stickers, but there is a noticeable lack of any new statements. I listen to a call-in talk show every morning just so I will know who they are and what they are thinking. There are vibrations of rabid racism out here. The violence is right below the surface. And here, no one eats grits, nor do they know what crystal is. And the accent is southern, South Alberta. Kate. Ba-dum! Okay. The United Nations Human, the UN Human Rights Council, has released a report, actually released it over the weekend, expressing serious concerns over human rights abuses in the United States of America? Oh, no! The report by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights points to human rights violations and concerns regarding torture, police brutality, and wide-ranging discriminations that the United States government has neglected to properly address. Systematic violations of human rights by the U.S. government were detailed in the report, which indicates that most violations affected African Americans, minorities, especially Muslims, and immigrant communities in the United States as well as abroad. One serious case cited in the report is the impunity given to private armed contractors and civilian intelligence agents for killing innocent people in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. The use of torture against prisoners and detainees by military personnel at Guantanamo Bay Prison, as well as detention centers in Iraq and Afghanistan, is also condemned in the report, which alleges that the United States, quote, had established secret detention facilities and that those detained in such facilities could be held for prolonged periods and tortured, end quote. It also censures rendition activities as they have increasingly placed people at risk of torture. According to the report, after the 9/11 attacks, non-U.S. citizens suspected of terrorism-related activities have been detained with few legal rights. The Human Rights Report also points out that the U.S. government is holding over 380,000 non-citizens in over 300 different facilities in the United States for removal proceedings. Those would be undocumented Hispanics. Another serious concern raised in the report was, quote, persistent racial disparities regarding the imposition of the death penalty, end quote, where it was recommended that the United States adopt all, quote, all necessary measures, including a moratorium, to ensure that the death penalty is not imposed as a result of racial bias, end quote. The report goes on, discrimination continues to pervade the U.S. where minorities, especially African Americans, face, quote, disproportionately high levels of unemployment, lower income levels, access to education, and to quality health care services, end quote. It also reiterates that many low-income African Americans continue to be displaced 5 years after Hurricane Katrina. Police brutality toward African Americans, Latinos, and undocumented migrants was also a cause for scrutiny and concern in the report. In addition, Arabs, Muslims, and South Asians were said to be the targets of racial profiling. The U.S. government has reportedly been monitoring private communications of individuals within and outside the country without judicial oversight, infringing upon people's right to privacy. That's us they're talking about! That's the United by God States of America! That's not the old Soviet Union. That's not that rising engine of capitalism, communist China. It's not Venezuela. It's not Cuba. It's not Canada. It's us. Well, you know, the United Nations, who in the hell are they, right? Ah, a bunch of damn third world, brown, dark-skinned, commie rat bastards, huh? Right? Always trying to tell us what to do. Hey, did you know Obama's going to bring in UN troops? He is. He's going to bring in UN troops, and they're going to round up all the real patriots, and they're going to put them in camps out in our Las Vegas. You didn't know about that, huh? Well, Jesus Christ, boy, you better wise up. There's all kinds of websites that'll tell you all about it. Yeah, he's bringing them in. So don't pay any attention to those UN High Commissioner crap-ass reports about human rights. Hey, this United States! Freedom isn't free! We do what it takes. Yeah, we do. Harry's in Canada, listening on Sirius. Hello, Harry.
Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Mike, I'm just great. Listen, I've just felt compelled to call you for a long time, and finally tonight I got through to you, and I just want to let you know that my hat is off to you. I admire what you do. I admire your voice, and I wish that more people in the United States of America with presence of mind would voice their opinions and stand up and start fighting what I see is the decline of America.
Well,
I'm sad for your country right now, Mike. It's, you know, I've got a lot of relatives down in the United States of America, and I honestly believe that we are seeing the end of freedom and liberty as Americans know it and as anybody in the free world knows it, and I'm really concerned about what's going on down in your country. Listen, Mike, the reason...
Well, let me just interject this. There are... the only difference between me and millions of people in this country is the fact that, you know, I've got this radio show that is picked up by Sirius and XM and a bunch of radio stations and the Internet, but there's an awful lot of people here who feel exactly the same way. And how we can... act together in this country to stop this. That's the big question. But there is a huge vocal faction of right wing crazy people. They control most of the electronic media in this country, at least insofar as the spokespeople go, like the radio, television, talk show hosts, so on and so forth. But there are an awful lot of people in this country. I don't want you to think, Harry, and I know it's easy to think that. Everybody in this country is a proto-Nazi. Not true. It's just that we haven't figured out yet. I swear to God, we haven't figured out yet what we're going to do with these bastards. The big problem in this country is lack of motivation. And that's why I've been talking about, half in jest, half seriously, about letting these neo-fascists have it. And once they have it, maybe that will inspire the sane people in this country, who are, in fact, in the majority. We really are. But maybe that'll inspire us to rise up and put a stop to this. Harry, let me put you on hold a second. We got a break, and we'll come back and chat some more because I just talked, and it was your call. Stay there. We'll come right back, Harry.
It'll be our secret.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Harry in Canada, who's listening on Sirius. Thanks for holding on, Harry.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Listen, Mike, on a happier note, what originally got me tuning into your station was I was just surfing on the radio one night, and I came across all the Floyd music. And anyway, I just, on the 16th of September, I saw Roger Waters do the wall up in Toronto, and if you don't, I'm sure you're a big fan. And
oh, yeah.
That is, if you're the guy that programs the music. But if you get a chance to see Roger do the wall, it's an amazing show, and I know you'd absolutely love it.
Well, I've seen a couple of presentations of the wall by Pink Floyd and the Australian version, which I think was Roger Waters and the crew a couple of years ago, which may be the same tour you're talking about, because I know he's been out on this Roger Waters tour. They're not calling it Pink Floyd, of course.
No.
But it's pretty astonishing. That album, which is now what? When did that come out?
79.
It's 33 years old. That's 31 years old. It's a little hard to believe that was released 31 years ago. But anyway, yeah, if it, I looked at their tour schedule as far as Waters coming here, and I don't think he's going to be in the Atlanta area, but if I get a chance, I'll definitely try to make it.
Oh, you should if you get the opportunity. Anyway, Mike, the bottom line is, you know, I truly believe that there's a lot of people like you in the U.S., and, that's what I'm counting on. You know, I admire your courage. You know, you're a voice of reason, and you're a voice of sanity. And, you know, in this country, we've got our own political situations, and right now we've got a conservative government in this country that has had a minority for quite a number of years, and they reflect a lot of the policies that I don't approve of.
Mm-hmm.
And they mirror a lot of things that are going on in your country. And we need a good liberal voice in this country again.
Yeah, you do. And I hope it happens in Canada for obvious reasons, since we not to offend anybody in the Great White North, but the differences between the United States and Canada are less, I think, than the differences between any two other countries on Earth that share this common border. I mean, my God, and I fully acknowledge the people of Quebec as not being, you know, necessary. You understand what I'm saying. There's a lot of people in this country who don't speak English either and who choose a different language as the French speakers of Quebec. But the differences are a lot smaller than similarities, I think, between the two countries. So, you know, whatever. And again, I don't want to offend anybody in Canada. God knows, linking the United States and Canada may be the worst thing I could have just said to our Canadian listeners, but I don't mean it that way. I just mean it from an historical point of view, you know. So,
well, you know, in a lot of ways, we're very similar, and a lot of our I just lost my train of thought there.
Well, I wonder how many Americans understand the trade between the United States and Canada. If I'm not mistaken, and I could be here, but Canada, I believe, is the country from whom we get most of our oil.
That's correct.
Now,
as a matter of fact, the tar sands in Alberta right now have the largest oil reserves next to Saudi Arabia on Earth.
Well, there's so much. It's astonishing to me how ignorant we Americans are. But where it concerns the neighbor to the north, it's just profound ignorance that exists down here. Hey, Harry, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Don't be a stranger. Call whenever, okay?
Take care, Mike.
All right, you too. I think that's right. Reg will let me know here in about 10 seconds if it's not if it's not right. About Canada being our number one source of oil. No, it's not Saudi Arabia. I think it is Canada. Oh, well. What's this? Roger Waters in Atlanta. Oh, okay. He is going to be here. Thursday, November 18th. Damn, we work then. Unless you catch a cold. We have to have Brad substitute for us or something like that. All right, we have a break here. We'll come back and take your phone calls again, so stick around. This is the Molloy Program.
decent singer, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music.
That's right. That's because my brother and I are now experts in the field.
Yeah.
Eh?
Right,
because we're a band now.
Yeah.
Well, so, except for him. I'm a band.
Oh, how can you do that? You're making me look bad. You're such a hose head.
Yeah, well, take off.
Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums.
Oh,
eh?
Get out. It is not.
It is
not
so.
Stop
I
lying,
learned.
Will you?
Take off, eh?
Oh.
Take off to the great white north.
Hey, I'm Mike Malloy, and I'm packing up the family and leaving the country. And we want you to come along. Okay, it's only a week, but you're invited to join me, Kathy and Molly, on a 7-night Progressive Voices cruise to the Eastern Caribbean. Also on board are Carrie Harrison, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Ring of Fire co-hosts Mike Papantonio and David Bender. You'll sail with Mike Farrell of MASH and his wife, Shelley Favre, from The Stephanie Miller Show, actor-comedian Hal Sparks, Daily Show co-creator Liz Winstead, and other Progressive hosts as well. We sail from Fort Lauderdale on February 5th to Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, and the pristine Half Moon Key. Join us and escape from those crazy teabaggers for a week with your fellow truth seekers. If you missed our incredible cruise a couple of years ago to Mexico, don't miss this one. Go to MikeMalloy.com and click on the Progressive Voices link to reserve your cabin. And please make sure you select Mike Malloy on the drop box that asks how you heard about the trip. Can't wait to see you on board.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. By the way, if you haven't today gone to bradblog.com, go right now. Just go. Bradblog.com. There's a couple of articles there, one that he has written today for truthout.org that you need to read. Just go there. Okay, bradblog.com. He's the guy that substitutes for me on a fairly regular basis. So I'm on his email alert, and you should be too. And I just got this at 10:23 Eastern Time tonight. That was, what, 12 minutes ago, 13 minutes ago? You got to see this. Go to bradblog.com. Jim is in Lombard, Illinois. Jim, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I just wanted to say that these Republicans and Christians, they never seem to mention the economic inequality in this country. And when they do mention it, they just seem to be trying to justify it with their belief in Calvinism. And to me, I think that the best philosopher that describes what I think about the distribution of wealth is John Rawls. And John Rawls talked about a thing that his idea was egalitarianism. And I think he would be about the best for any society in the world, as far as I'm concerned, and I've never heard anybody ever mention John Rawls.
I'm not familiar with him. How do you spell his last name? Rawls?
You know, I'm not really sure, because I heard him mentioned on this PBS lecture it's a lecture series, a Harvard lecture series called Justice. And I have it on DVD, but I'm not really sure how his name is spelled. I just, the professor, a Harvard professor, just mentioned his name in a lecture he was giving.
Well, you got my curiosity now, so I'll look up both spellings, Rawls and Rawls.
Yeah.
I'll check him out. Check him out, Jim.
And basically what he said was, basically, it's just this. those who benefit most from a society have a responsibility and an obligation to the least in the society.
Isn't that sensible? Isn't that, doesn't that require a maturity level that most people in this country don't have any longer, certainly not the right wing? It requires, you know, a lot of people say, well, that requires compassion. No, it doesn't. It requires a level of maturity and understanding of what human life is all about in any society, but especially here. And you don't find that level of maturity here, Jim.
And what he basically says, though, is that the people who benefit most, the reason that they benefit so much is because of the society valuing their talents, and that they're not really so responsible for the talents that they're born with as they think they are, and they're not so responsible for the level of society that they're born into.
Well, that's true, and I, well, I mean, it's true insofar as I would tend to agree with a lot of that. A lot of people, I listen to a lot of these right-wingers say, well, you know, I pulled myself up my bootstraps. In a pig's ass, you did. You didn't pull yourself up by your bootstraps in the first place. Your money probably came from your great-great-grandfather. But I hear what you're saying. Jim, I'll look that guy up. John Rawls. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. CG is in Cleveland. Hello, CG.
Hey, warmest regards to yours and you, Mike. Three quick points, and I would hope I ask you to hear me out first. Long before anybody else challenged Nazism in Europe, we had the Abraham Lincoln Brigade from the United States of America.
Right.
Real heroes, true heroes.
Uh-huh.
Second point is I'm one of those demoralized voters, but I voted already a month ago, and I've been working for the Democratic governor, not because I like him, but because I work at a community college, and his opponent here in Ohio is John Kasich, and in any of his commercials, and not in any of his speeches has he ever mentioned community college. Hey, and Rush Limbaugh, Jabba the Butt, doesn't he remind you of Herman Goring? I mean,
oh yeah, of course. And watch out for Kasich. I had an experience with Kasich, the one and only time that I appeared on that filthy Fox television channel about 5 years ago. This guy is a real thug.
He's a pig, Mike.
I know. If the people of Ohio vote this guy in, Ohio can just kiss its ass goodbye.
Well, this psychotic, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. Kasich is a failed member of Congress. He wants to be governor of Ohio. He's spouting the usual crap to become governor. He's running as though he's running against Obama or running against Nancy Pelosi or running against Harry Reid. And this fool wants to be governor of Ohio. If he gets it, be careful.
Hey, I put up 50-yard signs for Strickland. Not that I'm enamored with him. Like I said, just think if I'm a demoralized voter, what the moralized voter, you know, what the
sure.
motivated voters are going to do.
Sure. I hear you.
Peace. Best regards.
Thanks, CG. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Wow. John Kasich, yeah. Okay, it's spelled Rawls, R-A-W-L-S. John Rawls. Thanks, Chris. R-A-W-L-S, the economist that, who was it, Jim was talking about. Yeah, if you look at the movie Outfoxed, I'm in that for what, Kathy, about 8 seconds? About 8 seconds, 10 seconds in the movie. And it's when I made the huge mistake several years ago of accepting an invitation from the pigsty, the cesspool of Nazism, Fox, and to be a guest on a program. There were three, I think there were three or two right-wingers. Kasich was one of them. It was Kasich's program, I think. Yeah, they all cluster at Fox. They're cluster Fox. They get together for a cluster Fox. That's what they do. And I think he had Hugh Hewitt on with him, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Hugh Hewitt. what a jackass Hugh Hewitt is. Oh, my God. Hugh Hewitt is one of those right-wing Christians that I think Mark Twain used to write about. Twain wrote a couple of endearing pieces about various people that show up in heaven after they're dead. They don't realize they're dead. A couple of them realize they're dead, but they show up in heaven. And Hugh Hewitt reminds me of a Twain character. Hugh Hewitt is just not, he's not real. He's one of those third-tier right-wing talk show hosts, you know, who will never be Rush Limbaugh. He will never be O'Reilly. But he and Kasich are butt buddies from the word go. And I would imagine if Kasich does become governor of Ohio, Hugh Hewitt will probably get the job as postmaster general of the state or something. I don't know. He'll wind up with something. I can't help it. His name just cracks me up. Hugh Hewitt. You know he got his ass kicked every other day when he was in middle school, right? Back in the day. Hey, you! Come here! Give me your lunch money! Mama! Hugh Hewitt. Hugh Hewitt. He's the whitest white man I have ever been around. Oh, I wasn't around him. I was in a studio here in Atlanta, and Hugh Hewitt was someplace else. But he was. I've come across several of these guys who are so white. They look like ghosts. They, honest to God, they just like, you know, Limbaugh, as large a body surface as that man has, and he lives in Florida, and I don't think he ever sees sun. You know, Limbaugh. Well, Hugh Hewitt is the same way. Hughie Hewitt. I now see you got me giggling. I can't stop. Anyway, KCG, be careful, because John Kasich, has got that sly little, he looks like a Pekingese. He's got that look. Like, you know, if you ever walked into his house, he'd immediately try to start pumping your leg. You know he would. You know John Kasich would do that. Just like one of those little nasty-ass Pekingese dogs that some, you know, like Sharon Angle would own. You know, the woman that has the 20 dead cats in her basement. God, these people crack me up. The Godfather Trilogy, and we're going to strip the bark off of Hamid Karzai. I keep calling him Hamid. Hamid Karzai. Yes, we are. And also, did you do your homework? Dante's Inferno, Canto 33, lines 118 to 147, Mandelbaum's translation. It'll explain Dick Cheney. All right, my deepest and sincerest apologies, because they come out of a huge pool of ignorance over here in Malloy land about John Rawls. Looking him up on Wikipedia, oh my God, he's a moral and political, he gets involved in, he was one of the leading figures in moral and political philosophy, professor at Harvard. His magnum opus is A Theory of Justice, and which is about 40 years ago it was published. It's now regarded as one of the primary texts in political philosophy. His work takes as its starting point the argument that, quote, most reasonable principles of justice are those everyone would accept and agree to from a fair position. And on and on and on. So to those of you who are familiar with John Rawls, again, when my ignorance presents itself, it's like a screaming siren at midnight. now I'm going to have to find out more about John Bordley Rawls. And thanks to Jim for bringing his name up. He died in November 2002. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Jeff.
Ahoy, Malloy.
Right. Ahoy, Malloy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How
yeah.
are you, man?
Making
listen,
it.
I'll let you finish. What I was about to call was, I think this whole teabagger movement is going to implode pretty soon. Basically because I know down here in the South, if you got a cross by your name, they'll think you're anointed by the Lord, and they'll vote for you regardless of what you do
right.
in your private life. But I think over in Nevada and New York, nobody's going to vote for these nut jobs.
Well, they somebody had to vote for them in order for them to get through the primaries. You know, when Christine O'Donnell won in New Hampshire, I put quotes around the word won, there were only 10,000 Republicans that went to the polls. And I think I think her margin was like, what was it, 60% maybe? So 6,000 or 7,000 people. And I realize New Hampshire is a small state. It only has three counties. But dear God. And she, when she declared victory, she said, the people of New Hampshire have spoken. My ass they have. About 6,000 of them, probably all of them were drunk. You know, just went out and said, let's go vote for old Christine. By God, you know. So I hope you're right, Jeff. I hope they do implode. For the simple reason that they piss me off. That's all. I mean, this is the ignorance, most ignorant bunch of savages I think I've ever come across. So
and another thing is, one thing I've noticed for sure. You notice how many young people are at any of these teabagger rallies? I hardly see anybody younger than 45 there, unless they were dragged there by their parents.
I haven't seen anybody younger than 55, unless they were dragged there by their grandparents.
I swear, most of those people are like one Glenn Beck induced heart attack away from death.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The teabaggers, for the most part, Jeff, and you've seen this, I've seen it, most people have seen it. I don't know how many other people want to acknowledge it. They're all white. They're all on the public dole somehow. Medicare, Social Security, government-guaranteed retirement funds, IRAs, government bonds, something. You know damn good and well that these people are just sucking up as much as they can from the labor of other folks. You know they are. You know they are.
Yeah.
And they go to these, and they're all white, and a lot of them have these great big old-ass beer bellies, or gin bellies, whatever the hell they are. A lot of them smoking cigarettes. I don't know. They just irritate the bejesus out of me. And when new left media walks through the crowd with their camera and that guy, I forget his name, who does such wonderful videos and starts asking them questions like, why are you here? What do you believe in? What do you think about the First Amendment? Can you tell me what the Fourth Amendment says? And these ignorant savages just kind of sit there and go, well, I'll tell you what. You know, Barack Obama's from Kenya. You know, you just want to go up and smack them. I mean, literally, just slap them. Or what I like to do is just take their pants down, take them across my lap. I don't care if they're male or female, and just paddle the bejesus. Just paddle their asses until they turn red for acting like a bunch of 5-year-olds. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly.
And I'm not into spanking kids. But dear God, what I did, you know, I hope you're right, Jeff. I hope they do implode. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Every time I hear from a white guy in the South, because that's what I are. I are a white guy in the South. Every time I hear from another Caucasian male in the South, I just that shares a similar, or at least approximate point of view as I do politically, I think to myself, damn, there's two of us. No, there's a bunch more. There's a bunch of Caucasian Southern males that email or call this program. I know them all by their first names. There are not that many, but there is a bunch. There's a handful. All right. We're going to get ready for the third hour. Third hour coming up. What we got here? Godfather 3. Thanks to Joe in Temecula, California. We also have Dante's Inferno, Il Inferno, Canto 33, lines 118 to 147. I'm sure you looked it up. And also, we're just going to take Hamid Karzai and give him a bad case of the red ass. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Mitch McConnell's statement the other day, and that's probably the reason I haven't brought it up until now, but when he was asked what will be the function of the Republican majority after next Tuesday's election until the 2012 elections, he said, Mitch McConnell, who will be the Senate Majority Leader. Will he be the Senate Majority Leader? Yeah, I think so. Yeah? Yeah. He's the Senate Minority Leader now. He'll be the Senate Majority Leader. He said, quote, "The single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be one-term president." He added then, quote, "Our single biggest political goal is to give our nominee for president the maximum opportunity to be successful. We need to work smarter than we did in 1995 and not become the foil off which President Obama pivots." Now, when he said that the other day, even a right-winger like Joe Scarborough on MSNBC appeared to be floored by McConnell's open admission that his single most important goal is to defeat Obama. I don't know why I'm laughing. I guess because it's just nonsense and bull crap. All of it is. You know it is. You know it's all bull crap. Scarborough said on his program, quote, "Mitch McConnell said that. He admitted that on the record. That is embarrassing. Can I just say for the record, that is pathetic," end quote. No, it's not pathetic, Joe Scarborough. It's what guys like you feed off of. That's what television does or has done to our political system and continues to do. It's a bunch of bullcrap. It's nothing. It's nonsense. The end result is the destruction of our system. But when Mitch McConnell opens his pie hole and makes a statement like that, this freak this freak from Kentucky, and he notifies the American public. I mean, there you go. There you are, everybody. That's the Republican agenda for the next 2 years. To defeat, that means impeach Obama. So hold on your asses. I mean, just don't fool yourself, okay? You Democrats, don't think for a moment that your decision to bow out of this mess, which I fully support, if that's what you've decided, I'm not advocating that. Well, I guess I am. Yeah, to hell with it. The system is so corrupt. Anybody who thinks that the system is going to be changed by voting in Democrats is an idiot. Or a political naif. Or somebody who's been asleep for the past 35 years, politically speaking. But, on the other hand, allowing the Republicans to take over the government means more murder, more destruction, more debasement of the American political system, more poverty, more unemployment, more jobs going overseas, and one more step in the fulfillment of the great Reaganomics idea of screw the working person, put him and her back to the level of a serf. What did I mention last hour? I think I brought it up. The 49 top money sucker inners in this country took in more money than the next, 40 million? Was it a million to one ratio? I'll have to look it up during the next break. But, when you have that kind of a society, there's only one of two things that can happen. It continues its regressive move back to a feudalistic society, or there is eventually open, violent, bloody, screaming revolution. Because how long can people continue to ride this down slide into poverty, unemployment, loss of value of their homes, no job, no savings, no retirement? How long? I mean, forever? Okay. If the Republicans and the Democrats and these teabag freakoids and the rising Fourth Reich in this country, if the consensus is that that slide into fourth world status can just go on indefinitely with no reaction, then ride that donkey. Go ahead. Just ride it into the ground. What a shame. Mitch McConnell. He wants to be Senate Majority Leader in order to make Barack Obama a one-term president. That's how sick. Think Progress said from the moment Obama entered office, right-wing conservatives embraced the posture of hell-bent opposition. In January 2009, hate radio host Limbaugh expressed his hope that Obama fails. A month later, Mitch McConnell proudly embraced Limbaugh at a conservative conference. The fringe rhetoric of far-right activists had quickly become the de facto governing strategy of the Republican leadership. And that's when they adopted their posture of obstructionism, no matter what. If Barack Obama wanted to get a congressional resolution praising the glorious actions for the fatherland as performed by the wonderful patriotic Republican Party, he might have gotten 3 votes from the Republicans in support of that. And 2 of those would have been the 2 women from Maine. Okay, that's fine. Got an email from Mark. He said, I'm sorry we get your show on delay here in Washington. I guess it's Seattle. If we heard you live, I could have got you this in time to be of some use. Oh, well, file it for future reference. And it's about Cheney. As you know, I'm convinced that Cheney is a vampire. He is a ghoul. He is, I don't know, he feasts on the blood of innocent children. That's what keeps him going. And the reason he looks so vile after his last stint in the ICU at some hidden hospital is because he couldn't get baby blood. That's what he needs. He needs it to thrive. Cheney is a mass killer. He's in the Henry Kissinger range. Just a horrific individual who the spawn of which is trying to take up his hammer of death against everything on this planet. But from what I've talked about this freak, you can tell I really don't care for him. I mean, he just turns my, literally, there is a handful of people in American political system that when I see them, I do get a wave of nausea. The first wave is intense anger, and that immediately manifests in a physical reaction to nausea. It's just, it's incredible. Cheney is one of those people that triggers that in me. Well, Mark writes, you really have to keep up with your Dante, Mike. Then you wouldn't get so upset about seeing Dick Cheney wandering around. You see, he may already be in hell. It may be a demon occupying his body here, while his soul is already in the lowest circle of hell. It happened to Hitler. That's quite clear from the last photos of him. You can see it's only a hollow shell moving around in front of those 12 and 13-year-olds he's sending off as the Reich's last line of defense. The soul had long since gone to the pit, and so it might be with Cheney. And as proof of that, Mark has sent me from Mandelbaum's translation of Dante's Divine Comedy from the Inferno, which I'm going to share with you when we come back from this break. Canto 33, lines 118 to 147. Stick around. This will be a reading, a very brief reading, from the Divine Comedy, only we are going to focus on Il Inferno. Stay with us.
I feel no obligation. They put their faith and trust.
Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, I read the Divine Comedy when I was in high school, and subsequent to that, had occasion to read Il Inferno. That's my favorite part, really. Virgil wandering, or Dante wandering through hell with Virgil as his guide. Let's try this. This is from Canto 33, lines 118 to 47. This relates to Dick Cheney and his ilk. He answered then, I am Fra Albergio, Alberigo. Let me start over. He answered then, I am Fra Alberigo. But I said, are you already dead? And he to me, I have no knowledge of my body's fate within the world above. For Ptolemia has this privilege. Quite frequently, the soul falls here before it has been thrust away by Atropos. And, know this, as soon as any soul becomes a traitor, as I was, then a demon takes its body away and keeps that body in his power until its years have run their course completely. The soul falls headlong down into this cistern. And up above, perhaps, there still appears the body of the shade that winters here behind me. You must know him if you've just come down. He is Servranca Doria. For many years he has been thus pent up. I said to him, I think that you deceive me, for Branca Doria is not yet dead. He eats and drinks and sleeps and puts on clothes. There, in the Malebranche's ditch above, where sticky pitch boils up, Michel Zanche had still not come, he said to me, when this one, together with a kinsman who had done the treachery together with him, left a devil in his stead, inside his body. Okay, that kind of explains it. Yeah, for those of you who don't remember, I think it was Ser Branca Doria or Doria killed his father-in-law, Michele Zanche, and hence Branca Doria was sent to hell. His soul was sent to hell while his body kept eating and drinking and putting on clothing, as Dante said. So, okay, that explains it. Cheney is already dead. His soul already is in Il Inferno. And it's only the mechanistic movements of his body that people keep seeing. He is occupied now by a demon. I can buy that. I can buy that. Joe in Temecula, California wrote, Mike, the other day the Godfather trilogy was on television, so I decided to watch it while doing stuff around the house. It's been several years since I'd seen it, thus many of the scenes seem fresh or in some ways took on new context. One particular scene in Godfather 2 really got my attention. It's a scene where Michael Corleone is in Havana, Cuba, to have a meeting with one of the big bosses. The big boss wants to retire and turn over his holdings and operations to the Corleone family. It's during this meeting the big boss goes on and on about how great it is to finally have a partner in government, this being pre-Castro Cuba. Finally, they can do business without worry or investigations or restrictions. Finally, they don't have to worry about rules and regulations. The big boss is completely enthralled with how business-friendly Cuba under Batista really is. Heck, the Cuban government even loosened import tariffs for all of them. Everyone was making money in this free and open business environment. At the same time, the big boss was cursing the U.S. government, the FBI, and the prosecutors who would not leave them alone and let them operate how they wanted to operate. He lamented the rules, restrictions, and anti-business environment of the United States. For a few minutes, while listening to the big boss rant, I began to think how much he sounded like today's teabaggers. Is this what the teabaggers want? A country where crime syndicates, in other words, multinational corporations, are free to operate without fear of any reprisal? In effect, making what used to be illegal, now legal? When I stop and think about it, this is what has been going on in this country for decades. The laws have been changed to make what used to be illegal activity now legal, such as charging exorbitant interest rates, and more recently, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. In The Godfather 3, what was Michael Corleone's big dream? To become a U.S. senator and finally go legit, where he could be the one drafting the rules. If the teabaggers do take Congress on November 2nd, I can't help but think Michael Corleone will be smiling ear to ear, busily asking the consigliere to set up the next several big meetings. The U.S. will be open for business once again. Only it won't exactly be the kind of business the teabaggers have been brainwashed by the Koch brothers to worship. Joe, Temecula, California.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Before the hour. So both in the last couple of days, both the LA Times and the New York Times have reported something that I don't know. Are you surprised to find out that Hamid Karzai, our esteemed partner in the occupation, invasion, occupation of Afghanistan, receives bags of cash from the Iranians a couple times a year. Yeah, there was a press conference yesterday in Kabul, and Hamid Karzai acknowledged that he regularly receives bags of cash from the Iranian government, payments amounting to millions of dollars. Now, this is the guy. Remember, whatever you think of Hamid Karzai is immaterial. This is the man whose government we are supporting by sending our soldiers and Marines to go die and to kill for this pig. Now, a lot of folks will say, well, now, Mike, he's not a pig. He's just, this is business as usual in that part of the world. Well, okay. Then why doesn't he ask the United States to get the hell out and let him do his piggish stuff without American blood in his country and without the American military killing scores, hundreds of Afghans and Pakistanis? Huh? This is just madness. The Times reports it this way. During an often hostile news conference, Karzai also accused the United States of financing the killing of Afghans by paying private security contractors to guard construction projects and convoys in Afghanistan. Now, those construction projects, what do you think those construction projects are, Truth Seeker? Are they electric power generating sources for the people of Afghanistan? Probably not. Are they schools? Probably not. Are they health centers or hospitals for the people of Afghanistan? Probably not. What do you suppose those construction projects are? Do you think they are construction projects ordered up by multinational corporations from the United States, Europe, and China as these multinational capitalists get ready to extract the billions upon billions of dollars of resources from Afghanistan? Do you suppose that might be what the construction projects are? I doubt if it's road building to help the poor villagers in the mountains of the provinces of Afghanistan. I doubt seriously if it's water projects or sewer projects or power generating stations or schools or universities or hospitals or medical centers. What do you think? What do you think, Truth Seeker? Huh? What do you think? Come on, come on, come on. So in order to protect those construction projects, the international capitalists hire paid killers. People who are heavily armed, heavily armored, whose job it is to kill anybody who gets in the way of the construction projects. What? You think they're there to win the hearts and minds of the dear little brown people of Afghanistan, the tribes people, the hill people, the mountain people, those folks who have defeated every single invader? You think that's what the private contractors are there for? The capitalist militaries? And these guys aren't even in uniforms like the usual capitalist militaries are. The capitalist militaries of the United States, Great Britain, France, Germany, Russia, they usually wear identifying uniforms. But these folks don't. Now, wasn't there a time when Rumsfeld and or Cheney and or Bush and the rest of the monsters that really assisted this last stage of capitalism to deteriorate in this country, wasn't there a time when they said that anybody captured on a battlefield that did not wear a uniform but was carrying a weapon would be considered a terrorist and therefore could be tortured, brutalized, and extrajudiciously murdered, right? Wasn't it? Do you remember that long time ago? Oh, my goodness sakes alive. That must have been back in 2002, 2003, when the foundations of our newly discovered legal ability to torture people and rendition people and send people away to be tortured was put together by our glorious Republican Justice Department. Remember? Nah, I know. Nobody remembers that. Nobody remembers that. But anyway, private security contractors are guarding construction projects and convoys in Afghanistan. What do you think the convoys are? Are those convoys carrying, Are they carrying food supplies to the starving masses in Afghanistan? Are they carrying bricks and mortar to build those hospitals? And oh, never mind. You know what the convoys are. They're carrying pipe. They're carrying all sorts of equipment to dig and gouge and rip and tear and mine and drill and suck up and transport. And do you think the Afghan people are going to profit from this? Probably not. So anyway, Hamid Karzai also accuses the United States of financing the killing of Afghans by paying private security contractors to guard construction projects and convoys in Afghanistan. Now remember, he had ordered a December 2010 deadline for all private security forces to get their well-armored asses out of his country. Remember that? Remember? Yeah. Well, he's declining to postpone that December deadline for getting those people out of his country, even though he's getting urgent pleas from, I like the way the New York Times says this, Western organizations that need protection in Afghanistan. Western, and adds parenthetically, including development organizations? Really? In Afghanistan? Now, who would that be? Would that be these NGOs that get their financing from whom? I mean, who are the ones that the New York Times says are development organizations? Developing what? Gosh, I wish you guys would elaborate just a little bit. Could you do that? Anyway, the Times goes on. His statements were the latest indication that American relations with Mr. Karzai are badly frayed. Frayed. Badly frayed. When I think of the word frayed, when I visualize it, I see, couch cushions that the family dog has gotten to over the years. Oh, well. Despite diplomatic efforts to mend ties and improve governance in Afghanistan, in spite of all that, the relations between the Americans and Mr. Hamid Karzai are badly frayed. The tensions, therefore, threaten to undermine President Barack Obama's goal of handing responsibility for the war against the Taliban to Mr. Karzai and the Afghan military. Are you kidding me? Does Barack Obama still believe that Hamid Karzai and the Afghan military are interested in waging war against the Taliban? Aren't they meeting right now in Kabul or someplace? All these various factions? Not us, of course, but Hamid Karzai, our reluctant puppet. You know, I mean, we put him there. We've backed him. I think he's starting to read the tea leaves, and he started to think, Shah of Iran, Manuel Noriega, who's the guy in the Philippines, you remember, he had the wife with all the shoes, him. What about that guy in South Vietnam, Jim? Boy, they made short work of him, didn't they? Of course, Imelda Marcos just got elected to the Philippine Senate, so there might be life after death for me after all. Maybe he is starting to say, let us not forget Saddam Hussein. Former American puppets in that part of the world. And let's not even get into Central or South America, with the exception of Noriega, who was a great asset until George W. Bush decided, time to get rid of him. Wouldn't think about keeping him around. Couldn't do it. Wouldn't be prudent. Got to get rid of Mr. Noriega. So I would imagine Hamid Karzai is starting to hear the footsteps behind him. And it's not the angel of death. It's one of those private security contractors who just wants to sit down with Hamid and have a chat. Badly frayed relations with the United States. The tensions threaten to undermine President Obama's goal of handing responsibility for the war against the Taliban to Mr. Karzai, which would allow the United States to begin withdrawing troops next year. Withdrawing troops next year? Are you serious? There ain't going to be any troop withdrawals next year. There are going to be troop increases for this foreseeable future, especially after November 2nd, next Tuesday. Hallelujah!
Seasons change and so did I. You need not wonder why.
Before the hour, so our great ally in Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, the president, acknowledged the other day, yesterday, that he regularly receives bags of cash from the Iranian government, which he certainly is entitled to do, but it just doesn't seem in keeping with the idea that we have people over there murdering Afghans and Pakistanis, and in turn being murdered by people who don't like the fact that their people are being murdered. Well, what is going on, right? Do you ever wonder, do you ever sit down to yourself, Truth Seeker, and just kind of stare off into middle space and think, what in the hell is going on, right? Karzai, responding to questions about a report in the New York Times on Sunday that Iran sends regular cash payments to his chief of staff, Hamid Karzai, said in his press conference yesterday, they do give us bags of money. Yes, yes, it's done. We are grateful to the Iranians for this. Patriotism has a price, he said. Patriotism has a price. What does that mean? I have no idea. Somebody tell me. What does that mean in the context of what he's saying? Is that like what the teabaggers say, freedom isn't free? What is patriotism that has a price? What does that mean? Afghan officials, Western officials, said the Iranian payments were intended to drive a wedge between Mr. Karzai and the United States and NATO. No. You're kidding me, really? Also, day before yesterday, Mr. Karzai held what is described by the New York Times as a volatile meeting with the NATO commander, General David Petraeus, as well as other senior Afghan and Western officials to discuss the private security firms, XE and whatever the hell, I don't know, DynCorp. Who's there now? Who knows? Who knows? Nobody knows. This is just like a Citizens United Supreme Court ruling. Nobody has to know anything. You nosy bastards out there, you general public, you little working stiffs, we almost have you all unworking. You have no right to know this stuff. You don't care. Stay out. It's not your business. Get your ass back to work at Walmart and forget about it. This is big people stuff. To discuss the private security firms, big meeting. Hamid Karzai, David Petraeus, and other senior officials. And according to reports, old Hamid stormed out of the session. Stormed. Boom, 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 blah, boom, boom. Doors slamming, dishes breaking. Stormed out of the session saying that he did not need the West's help. In collecting bags of money from Iran? Well, of course not. I mean, my God. Hamid, surely you understand. I know you do because you're an Afghan, and that means you've been at the crossroads, literal, geographic, real crossroads of these great games now for, what, 3,000 years? You know how this is. You know what's going on. And now all of a sudden, with all this wonderful new technology that Alexander the Great didn't have, and the British in the 18th century didn't have, and God knows Genghis Khan didn't have it, and the Russians didn't have it. Now all of a sudden, with all this wonderful technology, it has been discovered that your country is a veritable gold mine. A literal gold mine, but also a uranium mine, and a copper mine, and a metal mine, and a this mine, and that mine, a natural gas repository. Hey, Hamid, you're sitting on trillions! And now you think the United States is going to leave, and NATO? Please! You don't need the West's help? Is that what you said, Hamid? He stormed out of the meeting saying, yes, I get bags of money from my good buddy, you know, I can never say his name either, Ahmadini Hoop or whatever. Yes, he gives me money. So, patriotism has a price. I wish somebody would tell me what that means. But I've been waiting for a couple of years now to get the meaning of freedom isn't free. Mr. Karzai stormed out of the meeting, saying that he did not need the West's help. Karzai has so far refused to modify his ban on the hired killers, although he said he would consider requests to delay it on a case-by-case basis. Now, the way it works on a case-by-case basis, if the case comes up and the case is chock-a-block with $100 bills, then Mr. Hamid Karzai will consider that case. If the case comes up empty, huh? Oh, that's not what he meant. But this is Hamid Karzai. The Times says, in many respects, his sharp words reflect a widespread feeling among Afghans that foreign security firms are running roughshod over them and intruding in culturally unacceptable ways on their daily lives. Culturally unacceptable ways. That would be like blowing up their weddings and sending drone aircraft in to, you know, kill Al-Qaeda leadership. But, oh, gosh darn, they just killed another 17 children. Quick, send, tell the Americans to send us a letter of apology, and we'll pass it on to the families. 17 children, $500 a children, that's $8,500, isn't it? Ah, can we afford that? Oh, my. At the news conference also the other day in Kabul, Hamid Karzai lashed out at the U.S., implying that American officials had leaked information to the New York Times about Iranian payments because of disagreements over the private security companies. Oh, you just can't trust these American officials, can you? They leaked information to that big old booger bear, the New York Times. Guess what, New York Times? Hamid Karzai is getting lots and lots of money from Ahmadini Hoop. This is madness. You know it's madness, don't you? You know it's madness. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.